It's really wonderful to be here this not so cold night after many, many cold nights with all of you. Some of you here for the first time, and we welcome you to the last night of our coming and going retreat, our coming and going sesshin. Some of us here have been here for the whole time. And this coming and going sesshin will end tomorrow morning sometime around 11 o'clock. Although we like to say that sesshins, that these kinds of retreats never really end because the energy and power of our practice just keeps going, even though the form is going to shift and change. David and I thought for this last night together here, in this form of retreat practice, this open house retreat, that we would talk about the Song of Zazen by Hakuin. And we tossed back and forth a couple of ideas about how to share the talk. The first one we rejected was that we would both talk at the same time. So you can be grateful for that. We also thought...
Although I thought that...
Another idea we had was that we would just say a few brief things and then the other person would say something and then the first person would respond back and forth. And we decided not to do that either, although that might happen someday. But we decided instead to do what we usually do when we're on our regular Boundless Way Zen Sesshin, which is share talks, maybe two people, one beginning and one ending. So I picked the short straw. Or the long straw. I actually don't know. I'm starting. And this this text that we just recited before the talk began, this Song of Zazen, is one of my personal favorites, and it really was the very first Zen text, Zen poem, that I heard and related to. I had been a Zen student for a while when I came across it in a book by Robert Aitken, and I just loved it. And somehow it spoke to me. Every line spoke to me, even the parts of it that I didn't understand. This stuff about pure land and a number of other technical terms in here that I later came to understand and that I'm not going to explain tonight. If we explicated everything in this short poem, it would take hours. But instead, I want to focus on just a few things and some of the inspiring things about this text for me. One of the reasons it came to both of our minds was that it contains the line, coming and going, we are never astray. And we thought that was a pretty nice capper to the coming and going sesshin. So many people have come and gone during this almost 3 weeks of practice. It's kind of amazing, really. We didn't, you know, take a census or anything like that, but sometimes the room was just packed full with people, and sometimes there were about a dozen of us, and we've been just practicing steadily all the way through. This practice of coming and going and never being astray is one of the things that Hakuin, who is an 18th century Japanese teacher, emphasized in his teachings. He was a revitalizer of Buddhism in Japan in the 17th and 18th centuries. He lived into his 80s and was a very vigorous person and really believed in the power of Zazen, the power of this sitting meditation. And that's what I want to read to you tonight and just comment on a little bit before I hand it off to David. Because it really applies to every single one of us in here. It was a belief that Hakuin had, and when I read it, I was really encouraged by it. If you think about it, however we encounter Zen, if it's for the first time or the zillionth time, there has to be a freshness to it, an aliveness to it. If we get caught in old patterns, even related to our zazen, related to our sitting meditation, we can really get lost and dulled and maybe give up. this practice of Hakuin, which was very vigorous, was about never giving up, having awakenings and then deepening the awakenings and integrating the awakenings into ordinary life, and never stopping and keeping going and keeping going and keeping going. No final place to stop. And this power of the practice, he says it in a few ways in here. He says, "Oh, the Zazen of the Mahayana, to this the highest praise, devotion, repentance, training, the many paramitas, all have their source in Zazen. Those who try Zazen even once, you guys, if you never come back here, even once." Isn't that great? What a concept. Even though Hakuin never gave up and encouraged his students to never give up, even if you give up, you can't get off the path. Once you're on, and it'll follow you for the rest of your life. Uh-oh. And if you want to run right now, the door is always open for coming and going. So he says, "Those who try Zazen even once wipe away beginningless crimes. Where are all the dark paths then? The pure land itself is near. Those who hear this truth even once and listen with a grateful heart, treasuring it, revering it, gain blessings without end. Much more, those who turn about and bear witness to self-nature that is no nature, go far beyond mere doctrine." So he's singing the praises of this practice that we do here for hours and hours and days on end. Sometimes we're doing it sitting, sometimes we're doing it walking, sometimes we're doing it chanting, sometimes we're listening to a talk, sometimes we're having a group discussion. All these practices all gain their power from this simple, simple practice of sitting upright and still in the middle of whatever's going on, not just outside of ourselves, but also internally, the mind that is so full of thoughts, the heart that's so full of emotions, the body that's so full of sensations and sense perceptions, this ongoing ruckus of awareness, sitting upright in the middle of it all, this doing Zazen, practicing Zazen, being Zazen. Zazen just literally means sitting meditation. This is what we're doing, and it seems like we do it wrong, or we don't get it, or we don't understand it. We're breathing, or we're sitting in shikantaza, just sitting, or we're working with koans or inquiries, and we think, "I don't know what I'm doing." And it doesn't make any difference, because the power of this sitting is so strong that it transcends all of our little ideas about everything. Self-nature that is no nature. This isn't about me doing something right. It's about simply surrendering to this simple, simple practice of being still and upright in the middle of everything. And we do it with some vigor, and we also do it with a sense of ease. Vigor and ease combined. Pure presence. Nothing else to bother with. And if you really hear this truth that Hakuin is singing about, that I heard years ago when I first read this text, that the truths of Zazen, which can be spoken of in an infinite number of ways, but can only be known in one way, deep in the heart, beyond words. This is the only way that we can know in Zen practice. Most of it is the practice of not knowing, knowing and not knowing combined, being present, being vigorous, being at ease combined. This is our practice, and if we hear it even once and we listen with a grateful heart and not try to be grateful or make up being grateful, but really feel the wonder of it and feel it in our hearts, this gratitude for the luck to encounter this practice in our lifetimes, when we've been struggling and wandering on dark paths for so long. And I got to tell you, at least based on my experience, we'll wander those dark paths again and again, but it doesn't matter. All we have to do is devote ourselves to this practice, even once, with gratitude, and treasure it and revere it, we'll gain blessings without end.
Let me correct what Melissa said.
I thought you were going to do that.
No. It's good to come up second. this for me too, a wonderful text. These writings that in Zen. There is no one sacred book, but many inspirational writings that are handed down. And we always say that these, the purpose of these writings and these texts is to, as Melissa was indicating, to turn us to our own experience. Hakuin is so clear about that in the last lines when he says, truly, is anything missing now? Nirvana, we might say freedom, is right here before our eyes. This very place is the lotus land, this very body, the Buddha. So the lotus land is where, in the Shin Buddhist tradition, where if you prayed to Amida Buddha, you would be reborn into the lotus land through your faith, not through any thing you did. But here Hakuin is saying that this lotus land, this place that we dream of, is not somewhere else. And this very body is the Buddha. But this question is, truly, is anything missing now? Is a wonderful point of investigation. Because on one hand, we live a life where we believe in scarcity. In our culture has taught us that there is not enough, which is quite a thing when I think of the being able to convince people like ourselves who have so many things, so many gadgets and time-saving things and beautiful things and things of all sorts, and yet, we walk into the Apple store and are just convinced that the iPhone 17 really is so much better, quite a piece of craftsmanship that we probably need. Or something else, whatever it is for you. But we swim in a sea of not enough. And we, as humans, seem to have this sense of lack. So if it's not things, then maybe ourselves. We just are quite certain that we are not enough. We need to be more calm, more wise, more energetic, less energetic, more talkative, less talkative. It is endless the ways we think we are lacking something. And so to actually take up this question. So, thinking about your life right now, what is missing? What could be missing? And of course, the mind can come up with ideas. Well, I'm missing the job I really want, or the partner, or whatever. I want a future that's more clear, more guaranteed, or I want. But so we can hear and notice those voices in our heads. But then Zen is about turning to our actual experience. And as we sit still and unmoving, we can begin to see that the nature of the mind is to generate thoughts. And these thoughts are in some way neither true nor false. They are just thoughts. Thoughts are not bad, and in Zen we're not trying to get rid of our thoughts, which is a good thing, because utterly impossible to get rid of thoughts. But we can begin to see that all the things that come up in our head, all of the thoughts and all of the opinions, actually come and go. And we can begin to see how they keep changing. One moment, I think I'm doing quite well. I've learned something. I have some maturity. And then the next moment, I'm sure I'm a total idiot. I can't believe I said that. I can't believe I didn't say that. One teacher says it's like we have a crazy person living in our head that we believe. Someone who does not have a very firm grip on reality, but just blathers out whatever comes to his head, and I believe him one more time. So we begin to see thoughts coming and going, these opinions coming and going, and we begin to see the possibility of being with our actual experience of the moment. Really feeling the sensation of the breath as it comes in and goes out. Noticing sensations in the body, feelings and emotions, thoughts. And in this, is there anything lacking? There is a fullness to our experience. We may not like it. We may wish it were different, but indeed, in this moment, this is what we have. Another way to put the question is, what if this is enough? What if you don't have to try so desperately to change? What if you don't have to get more of anything, but can receive this life that is so freely given, can appreciate what is here. And this is what Hakuin is singing of, that this very place is the place we have been longing to find, our true home. And this very body, this very life, no matter what our opinion, no matter what the terrain we are traveling through, this very body is the awakened life itself. Thank you. So, we invite you to sit comfortably, and now we have the opportunity to raise questions, concerns, and share from your experience of this practice, of this reading, of listening to our words. And Diane will answer all your questions.
I was going to say that.
I'm going to ask them all.
Oh, okay. Ask them
all. Yeah. Chris?
I absolutely love chanting this. I've loved it from the first. I always imagine that I'm Jesse Jackson when I chant it. I really feel like it has this astonishing emotion and power that so few Zen texts have for me. And I'm so glad that it is a song, because to me it feels like a song, like it feels rhythmic and powerful. And it's interesting that you asked that question, truly is anything missing now? Because I think that the answer to that question for me is almost always gratitude. Mm. When I'm asking that question, it's not just an affect, it's a perspective, it's kind of an energy that changes the question from truly is anything missing to nothing's missing. Mm-hmm. And I know it sounds crazy, but there's something musical about it. There's something musical about that gratitude. I feel like that's the, like the, it's the, the, this chant is a song in gratitude time. Like it's not 4/4. Like the like the rhythm of the chant is this recurrence of a recognition that we are truly, truly blessed. Which is again, that's I think. I mean, I had the benefit of attending quite a few services in African American churches when I was a kid. And it really has that feel of a revival song. Like, we are blessed. Let's just talk about it. Let's just like be in that energy. And so it was wonderful to hear you talk about it. And I think it's funny actually that Hakone of all people has a song. Like, he's kind of a curmudgeon in certain ways to me. Like, but his energy is so vibrant. And anyways, I just wanted to share that.
Great, thank you. I think it is such an enthusiastic piece, right? It does, he is bubbling up with the Zazen of the Mahayana, to this the highest praise, this is cool, it's right here.
It's not the grass.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing, it's like,
I liked to hear use of the word ruckus, Mohsen, said, sitting still and upright in the middle of the ruckus. And it just seemed to capture it so perfectly. So, you know, ruckus doesn't necessarily have a bad or a good connotation. It's just the ruckus going on again. I mean, it's just constant, you know. Yeah. And that is our practice, to sit still and upright in that, you know. So,
that's right.
Yeah, it was so...
Yeah, I think it's important not to manufacture anything in that state, you know, to really keep questioning, what is this? You know, is anything missing? To kind of watch the vibrancy. I mean, really, Hakone was a very vibrant character. Mm-hmm. He was delighted with life. He talks about Kensho experiences as the little moments that make you dance. You know, was a very, very enthusiastic person. And to be enthusiastic in the ruckus, you know, not to try to be peaceful, calm, grateful, happy, whatever, you know, some kind of Zen person, but to really, really be an alive person. I think that's what he was pointing to. I think that's what we do here, too. We try not to manufacture stuff, you know, not be that wooden puppet that somebody else, Ahamjur, talks about, I guess. Somebody talks about.
Well, and in his singing and dancing, there the voice of the law. I said, "Well, this is a law I can know." George,
I am struck from my personal experience about sort of the artificial aliveness that is the cacophony around us versus the inner aliveness, which is opening ourselves up. And the struggle to go back and forth between the two, but I really, you know, that's what it's coming up for me, is just the zazen is the opportunity for the inner aliveness to begin to emerge, and, you know, still further effort to try and carry that out to the world, but, you know, at least it begins to emerge.
You know, I think in the emergence itself, you probably can feel this already a little bit. You don't have to do anything with it. You don't have to even bring it out to the world. You can trust that the emergence itself is enough. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's a certain point that I think I touch into where that inner aliveness and the outer aliveness isn't different or separate. You know, that way you don't have to block out stuff. The outer ruckus, the inner ruckus, you start to see, like, wow, there's just this stuff going on all the time. And to value, I think we tend not to value that inner ruckus as much, but it sounds like that's what's starting to happen for you.
Yes, I actually had in mind more the iPhone 17 level of rocket or cacophony.
Do you have one of those?
No.
I hear they're awesome. They plant them in your forehead.
Well, George, you had the opportunity over the retreat to be in residence here and then go to work. So you were sort of shuttling between a kind of very protected thing where you're saying that, you know, then that there is some protection necessary and helpful to actually allow to tap into it. And I love how you're saying it's the aliveness that's already here. It's not like we sit on the cushion and try to manufacture, man, I gotta come up with some aliveness today. and then going out into a world where there's a lot of stimulus, right, a lot of demands, you know, job, you know, rules, da, da, da. So quite a thing to weave back and forth. Yeah.
Yes. You were truly coming and going.
Yeah.
More than any of us.
Good, thanks.
Thank you. Yeah.
Anybody else with a thought to share about the great matter here? The little matter. And that.
Well, I'll share this. There have been days. I'm very grateful for this coming and going session, especially right at this time. There's a mysterious, magical congruence between the timing of this session and my need for it, which is inexplicable. I can't explain it. But there have just been these afternoons where I have not been able to work, not been able to even clean my toilet. Well, today electricity went out, the whole power went out in the area, my area, for a couple hours. But to have this be my work, not in a oh, it's my work, but to be here instead of curled up in bed, or to have the choice to come here, and you know, especially on the last day, feeling grateful that I could be here for the last day. There is something wonderful about sitting with others. So it is truly a refuge, even to be able to sit once. What, maybe it was Suzuki Roshi who said, if you can't, sometimes you can't do anything else. If you can't do anything else, at least you can, at that time, you can sit down, do zazen. So, it's been a little like that for me. This has been here during these can't do anything else hours. Right. And what a wonderful thing.
What a wonderful thing. Thank you, Nat. That's so grateful to hear that reflected back. I mean, I think when, you know, this is what, the fifth coming and going session that we've done?
Fifth.
And you know, so we've been here at the temple for 5 years, almost 6 years now. And that was the intention originally, a place where people can come and go and practice. And it's really come to fruition, and to have a stable place that's just sitting here so that we can come and sit in it. I like that a lot. I find refuge in it every day.
And somehow we create it together. I love the sort of the magical, you know, that almost as if all of us were meant to be here this evening. You know, in some arising in all of our lives, this was the thing that made the most sense this evening.
Right.
And in Zen we say the self and the world create each other. So in the coming, you create the temple. Right, we create the temple in our showing up in this way. So it's quite lovely.
And I did love, Nat, how you said, and you can't do anything else, because I think that's true for all of us, you know? We can't do anything else except this. Then this is one thing we can do, right? Yeah. So in that... feel that we're all united.
So
yes, we said it.